Welcome to Crazy Shit in Real Estate, a weekly podcast where I walk you through some of the wildest, most unbelievable stories you'll hear from the world of real estate. If you like real estate and you love crazy, this is the podcast for you. Welcome to the podcast. I'm Lee Brown, and you're listening to Crazy Shit in Real Estate, your favorite real estate podcast, frankly, because here is where you get to hear the stories that realtors tell each other over cocktails and fun, and that HGTV does not have the nerve to discuss. But frankly, when you are buying and selling real estate, your professional realtor has been through things they never expected, and they still came out the other side able to serve you. So today, I'm bringing y'all one of my esteemed colleagues, Marilyn, is with us on the show today. How are you doing, Marilyn?
I'm doing greatly. Thank you.
All right. So tell our listeners where Marilyn Richardson does real estate, how long you've been doing it, and any of the side information they should know about you.
Okay. Well, I'm on the mortgage side of real estate, and I've actually been doing it for 52 years.
Shut up. Are you serious?
I am absolutely serious. Yes.
Okay. So you're officially the longest surviving mortgage person I have ever met. That's crazy. How do you survive in this business for 52 years?
Well, I stopped drinking a long time ago. Just kidding. Not really drinking. I think you just have to be prepared to constantly go through the changes. I think that's the biggest thing. As you know, the real estate industry changes a lot, as do mortgage loans. And so I think you just have to keep fresh that way. And I think also you just have to learn to kind of go with the flow and don't take things personally, and or else, you know, the stress will get to you for sure.
Okay. So Marilyn, you're a woman.
Yes.
You can't have been the average mortgage person 52 years ago. I'd love to know what that journey has looked like as you have moved up the ladders that, frankly, you've created a lot of the ladders you've succeeded on. So talk to us a little bit about what it was like to break barriers then, and you're continuing to do it now, which I'm so fascinated by the company you're building, and you'll tell more about that in a minute, but go back 52 years.
I started out as a receptionist, which is pretty typical for a female. And I was fortunate because I worked for a mortgage company. My first mortgage company was a new one that was starting in California. And so with that, created some opportunities. And so every time I would see an opening in another position, I would ask for it. I'd like to try shipping. I'd like to try closing. I'd like to try processing, underwriting, et cetera. And I think for me, all of the jobs that I had were pretty much female jobs, the shippings, the closings, the processing. You didn't see too many men in those. But when I started getting management jobs and they could see that I could handle the management of people and make good decisions, I think they were more willing to give me a shot, but it still wasn't that easy. I ended up with the original Mason McDuffie was a partnership and was a very old partnership. They started in 1887, but I got promoted to the home office and just started going into each department and being efficient and cleaning it up. And I also had a mentor. And I think back then, even today, it's really important to have a mentor. And my boss really saw the value in that. And fortunately, he was a senior partner. And he absolutely refused to vote in another partner unless they let me in. And of course, they didn't want to because there were no female partners at the time. And so after 2 years of not allowing any new partners, the other partners agreed. So I became the first female partner of Mason McDuffie in 1979. And it was very odd because back then, the place where they met was a club in San Francisco. They didn't even allow women. So they had to find another place to have their partnership meetings. Of course, the partners had their own restroom, which was all men. So they had to adapt to that. And so it was really, I think, working hard, making sure that I worked efficiently and that I was able to make hard decisions and created value for the company, and then having a mentor who appreciated that value and was willing to put himself on the line to make sure that I was recognized.
And you asked for it. I love that part of your story. You saw something you wanted to try. You asked for it. You got it. You did it. You moved on. And I think that's where a lot of people miss opportunities nowadays. They want to start off as a CEO because they have X degree or they just think they're ready for it. And there's so much to be said for that desire to work and learn every angle of an organization, because by the time you had the opportunity, your skill set was so developed. I mean, it would have been hard for them to have any reason to say no, except that they didn't know what to do with you. And they probably didn't want to dilute their own partnership. And I'm curious, in the late 70s, when you became a partner, how many women were in that level of partnership, ownership in the mortgage profession? Like, what percentage would you say were females?
I would say it was a very low percentage. In fact, during that period, there weren't that many female loan officers even. Most of the females had the support positions. And so women were just starting to be accepted in on the real estate side as well. We started seeing more female agents and then more female loan officers. But it was interesting because if you would look at the women who were being hired as loan officers, and I don't know about the real estate side, but they were all the thin, blonde, cute.
Do what it's look.
Yes, yes, exactly. But that did fortunately change. But I do have to also say that until 1974, even to use a woman's income to qualify for a loan, we had to get a letter about her intention of having children.
Are you serious?
I didn't know that. Serious. Yeah.
Because I was born in 74, so I don't know all of that history. I mean, obviously, I look much younger than that. But
right. So, well, it was the Fair Credit Housing bill that stopped that, you know, as far as our ability to ask those questions. But people are amazed when they hear that we actually had to do that.
So who would write the letter? The husband?
He would.
The dad?
No, she would write the letter saying, I don't intend to have any more children if she had children. My husband had the operation, so we can't have any more children. Or I don't plan on having children for 4 or 5 years. So she had to address that because that's the only way we consider her income as stable.
Okay, so that's one of the giant changes you've seen in mortgages in your 52 years. What else would you say was a sea change in the way of whether it's credit and application approvals or it's the demographic moves that we've seen? What else is?
I think just the actual products. When I first got into the business, we mortgage lenders could only do FHA. We didn't have the ability to do conventional loans.
Really?
Really, yeah. Eventually, Fannie was given approval to buy conventional loans, and they had created Freddie Mac, and then we were able to. Your conventional loans were done by savings and loans. So definitely just a wider range of programs and a lot easier. Also, the borrower had to handwrite their own loan application. We weren't allowed to take that. For fear, they were afraid, I guess, we were going to make things up. So we could send a typed one, but we had to send it with a handwritten one that was handwritten by the borrower. Also, documentation, of course, now we can verify income with pay stubs, W-2s, transcripts, those types of things. And back then, it all had to be sent from the lender to the employer on a written verification of employment and also to the financial institutions for the verification of deposits. So it's also it's a lot easier as far as the documentation and more investors. We also didn't have brokers, didn't have the opportunity to broker loans. Back then, your lenders actually made and serviced their own products.
You mentioned the savings and loan opportunities or the how they used to do the financing. And you obviously were a lender through the crisis in the 80s that saw the savings and loans crash. What was the lesson you learned from that you give to the people who work under you now to help them survive cyclical and market related changes that nobody saw that coming except for the people on the inside? And that's a different discussion, but the people here in the streets felt the repercussions. What do you tell people to watch for now?
I think a lot of it is just doing risky loans. What happened to the SNLs is when they were approved to start doing construction loans and commercial loans, which was a lot riskier, and they weren't doing their due diligence and really looking at, you know, the risk factor there and how to protect that. I don't know that we did learn it, because we went through a similar situation with subprime for a while. And then, of course, you know, with the type of products where we weren't verifying. What I say is that you have to be prepared to change quickly. We were one of the few lenders here in California that were doing FHA loans, and that's because we had a branch in Oklahoma and a branch in Colorado where they were still doing FHA loans in 2000, you know, prior to 2006. We, having been fortunate to do FHA, once the crisis hit in 2007 and 2008, we could immediately switch to FHA loans, which hardly anybody in California, at least where we're at in the Bay Area, were doing just simply because of the loans. But we had to retrain everybody. Realtors were afraid of FHA at that time here in the Bay Area.
They still are.
You're right. Yeah, you have to learn to not count that you can still do business the same way as you did today or are doing today tomorrow. You have to always be open to making a switch quickly.
Goes back to one of the things you said earlier about how fortunate you were to have a mentor who saw your skills and helped push and promote you and go to the table for you, which he did to make you a partner. But I would imagine that during the cyclical changes, as you were in those earlier years of your career, you probably leaned on his guidance and expertise to help you stay focused in the right direction. And my guess is, as CEO, you do that now in some limited capacities. So what would you tell realtors or loan officers or any normal people listening to this episode who are thinking, man, I wish I had a mentor like Marilyn? How do they find one? What questions should they ask? Because you and I are both very busy women. We can't mentor everybody that asks unless it's virtual because we just don't have any more hours in the day. So how do they find one and select one?
Well, I think they look to see who's successful, you know, who's been successful in their own career and who's open to sharing. Not everybody's willing to share success. And so you have to find somebody like I was fortunate to have, somebody that was willing to share that information, as I was even with the first mortgage. I used to, you know, chase processors around. What do you do? You know, and I'd say, can I stay late and help you so that I can learn how to do it? And then I would find out who was the best one. And that's who I would, you know, be friends with. So I think you have to yourself see them and then just ask them questions. And if they ask them to go out to lunch and if they're willing to do that and be open with you, then you know you've got somebody and you know they're successful. So you can, you know, feel pretty comfortable that their advice is going to be good.
Your mentor doesn't have to be the CEO. Your mentor could just be somebody who knows more than you do about some particular aspect. And your mentors can change over time. If you notice what Marilyn said, she's had different opportunities to get to know people and learn from their skill sets. And then you move through because we all are growing and changing. And you may actually surpass one of your original mentors. And that's wonderful because I know that if I'm mentoring somebody and they go past me, I'm like the proudest mother hen ever. I'm like, I can't believe this. Look at them go. And I'm the proudest ever. And you want a mentor that thrives on your success and doesn't want to hold you back because they think it's going to dim their light. So just pay attention to those relationships and how they work.
I think today there's so much information. I mean, you're a mentor. People can listen to your podcasts. People can follow people on Facebook and look at, or read their blogs. Or we were fortunate to have you as a speaker at our sales conference. And so in that moment, in that presentation, you were mentoring our loan officers on how to have a better relationship with a realtor. And it was up to them. I mean, you're successful. You know what you're talking about. And so it was up to them to take your information and now take it back home with them and start utilizing it. So you can be mentored in many, many different ways. And in today's world, there's no excuse not to be learning from the best.
See, and this is why you're a CEO, because you just put the onus back on the mentee, because too often they expect the mentor to do the hard work for them of opening doors and making their success happen. But the really successful ones are out there saying, I got an idea from you. I'm going to implement it. I'm going to make this happen. And then if you show them the door, they go crack it and get it open. So it's definitely a two-way street. And I love that you call people on the carpet for that, which is why you're so respected in your company. So Marilyn, you're obviously never going to retire because there's no point in it. You've been doing this for too long and you get bored anyway. So what would you tell people who are bored in their careers? Because in 52 years, I know that at some point you've gotten bored by mortgage and you've had to reinvent. What's your best advice for people who are needing to get re-energized and reinvented?
Well, I think looking at different ways to do your business. And as you know, with the technological disruption that we're seeing in both of our industries, that you need to be spending a lot of time in learning new techniques, such as videos and podcasting and getting more active on Facebook. And those are the things I think that keeps you fresh, looking at new ways to do your business, communicating more with other people in the industry, starting groups. I think that you have to take ownership, just like you were mentioning before, you have to take ownership in changing it up. Because it is, you're right, I've been bored many times, but that's what I do. And for me, at my stage, it is about the mentorship. It is about leaving my legacy here at Mason McDuffie and creating opportunities for the younger generations to come in and create success for themselves the way that I was able to do. And so that's kind of how I'm keeping myself fresh today. That's what's important to me.
All right, people, you heard her. You need to go to conferences and conventions and mastermind groups and be with your peers and do as much education as possible. And I'll just say, particularly when it's things you're uncomfortable about, if you're uncomfortable with social media, that's where you need to be. And if you're uncomfortable with podcasting, that's where you need to be. Now, Marilyn, before I let you off the podcast, because I'm giving you extra minutes because I can, and it's my show, and I think you're amazing. I love the company and the way the culture is thriving under you. So when the day comes that somebody else takes the helm from you, what is the legacy you'd like to have? People say Marilyn, and they think of what?
Well, hopefully the legacy that I keep is that Marilyn was a teacher, because to me, that's the big thing for me, is that I was able to teach others how to create, if they choose to do so, to create a really great career, especially females in this industry, because it's one that doesn't have the glass ceilings.
Well, if there's glass ceilings, then they were created internally, because it winds up being in your head a lot of the time. All right. So I'm going to have to put a little tiny bit of video here so we can show it to old Phil Treadwell, because you know Phil likes to do some videos. So let me show that we're doing a podcast with one of my favorite CEOs. This is Marilyn Richardson. Hey, visitors listening on the podcast, I'm recording a little bit of Instagram video here. Y'all should follow over there. So Marilyn, before I let you off the show, tell them one thing they should do every day to have a happy life, mortgage related or not.
What I do every day is meditate. You need to have that quiet time to just, you know, kind of, you know, take a deep breath and just calm yourself and prepare yourself for the new day.
And Marilyn, who's in charge of your success?
I am.
What? See, I love that you didn't say we are. I can't stand when people want to draw other people into their circle. It's all about your personal responsibility for your success in life. I think you're amazing. Hey, Instagram, she's been a lender for 52 years. This podcast. Hey, friends, can you please give a big round of applause wherever you are, in your basement or in your treadmill, for Marilyn Richardson? And check out Mason McDuffie, because their lending culture is really something to observe. And I hope that they get a really great lender here in Charlotte soon. They're licensed in North Carolina. And Phil and I are trying to get you somebody great hired. I like to have missions in life. And Marilyn, I know that you have 1,000 things to do, but thank you for taking time out of your schedule to be in front of my podcast listeners and for the culture you're building in the mortgage world, because it's such a positive and energetic environment. And I'm grateful for what you're doing out there.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. And it's been a pleasure speaking with you. And thank you again for taking time out of your schedule to come and do a presentation. It was awesome. If any of you have a chance to hear Lee, you've got to do it. It definitely is a changer as far as really understanding how to deal with agents. And, you know, she's awesome.
I appreciate that. See, it's a mutual admiration society. Yes. And y'all, if you have information about Marilyn, I'll include the information for Mason McDuffie in the show notes for this episode so that you can learn from her organization because they're amazing. And if you are a realtor, investor, inspector, lender, broker, or a buyer or seller of real estate, and you'd like to share your story about real estate life on the show, give me a hit at Lee Brown on Twitter or any of the networks to be featured in a future episode. Subscribe, give me 5 stars because I'm worth it, and I'll see you next time.
If you are listening to this episode and you need to tell us something about your crazy life in or around real estate, then tweet me at Lee Brown or reach me on any of the social networks. That's if you're a broker, realtor, investor, inspector, lender, or just a regular normal human being who happens to have dealt in real estate. Subscribe for more episodes. And as always, we are thrilled that you joined us for some crazy shit in real estate. See you next time.